Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Newark Airport has recently implemented a restriction on arrivals and departures, allowing only 28 planes in and 28 planes out an hour. That cap is being lifted soon as the airport continues to recover from staffing shortages and as a construction project nears completion. Nationwide, the staffing of the Federal Aviation Administration is about 3,500 air traffic controllers short of targeted levels. Will worries about air travel keep summer travelers on the ground for the next few months? Or will people keep flying no matter what? Joining us now is Pete Muntean, a CNN correspondent, a pilot, and a flight instructor. Welcome to All Sides, Pete.
Thanks, Amy. Happy to be here.
So the big question on everyone's mind right now is it safe to travel by plane right now?
I would say it's safe to fly right now, and that's the insistence from the Trump administration and Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, from United Airlines CEO all the way down to the FAA administrator. This is really an unprecedented time for aviation, and it's really the issues at Newark are a microcosm of what is happening nationwide. You mentioned the massive shortage of air traffic controllers, about 3,000 controllers short right now in the U.S., and many controllers are working mandatory overtime of six-day weeks, 10-hour shifts, 60-hour weeks, which is a huge and unsustainable problem. And there is really an aging infrastructure problem that the FAA's own back-end infrastructure is showing its age. It's unstable. That's really what precipitated all of these problems at Newark. They had major air traffic control meltdowns back in November, then one on April 28th that caused five controllers to take what's called trauma leave. That's a 45-day-long leave. There were two more meltdowns on May 9th and then May 11th. The FAA and the Department of Transportation insist that the problem is now fixed, but this is really just sort of a bad, perfect storm intersection of all of these problems at once. Bottom line, it's safe to fly, yes, but there are still issues baked into the system, and it's really showing no sign of ending anytime soon.
Now, this shortage of air traffic controllers, 3,000 short, seems like a big number. Why do people not want to be air traffic controllers? Why are we not finding enough people for these jobs?
Well, the big thing is that the Air Traffic Control Academy in Oklahoma City has been really backlogged, and it's been backlogged through the pandemic, and they've really not sort of fixed that backlog. Also, the FAA was really not hunting for ducks where there were ducks, and they weren't finding the right people for the right jobs. At a point, they were trying to recruit gamers who are actually kind of have the same kind of skill set of working a map and solving problems in real time. The thing is that it can be there's a sort of a competitive job market out there, and it can be sort of unenticing for a lot of people to be in essentially what is a dark room at a radar scope, talking on the radio and communicating with airplanes. So there are a lot of cascading issues there. And so now the FAA is trying to do what they're calling supercharging hiring. They're trying to put in more incentives for people who reach certain benchmarks at the FAA Academy. They get to the Academy, these new hires, and a lot of them wash out. The failure rate is pretty high. They realize that the job is a lot harder than they thought it would be going into it. And also, there's a really big issue with retirements and attrition. So the FAA may hire 1,200 or 1,800 new controllers in a year, but they might only net single or double-digit numbers of new controllers when you factor in attritions and retirement. So now they're trying to incentivize it so that those who are eligible to retire at age 50, there's a mandatory retirement age at 56, they get a little bit more pay to try and keep them on. So they're doing what they can, but it's an agency that's really, really hamstrung. And by the way, the infrastructure issue comes in here too, because about 90% of the FAA's budget goes into band-aiding that old kind of World War II post-war era technology that's really falling down on the job.
Now, Newark had to, after all of the issues there, they went down to, they implemented restrictions on arrivals and departures. This was unprecedented, but they only let 28 planes in, 28 planes out every hour. But I have to think that maybe we were just allowing too many airplanes. Is that what part of the reason that this job is so stressful, is there's too much air traffic?
Well, and air traffic keeps growing all the time. Mm-hmm. And the FAA just had a record-breaking day leading up to Memorial Day. They control about 55,000 planes in one day in total in the national airspace system. That's all air traffic control facilities nationwide. It is not easy to keep the system from being overwhelmed right now. And there was this sort of pent-up demand post-pandemic of so many people wanted to travel because of the downturn in travel. There was just incredible interest in getting out and going places. We thought that was maybe a bit of a brief phenomenon. Now it seems that it is here to stay. And we know that air travel will grow about 4%. Summer travel will grow about 4% this year compared to last year. And just the Thursday before Memorial Day, the TSA screened 2.96 million people at airports nationwide. That's mm-hmm. the fifth highest number they've had in TSA history. That's a Thursday before Memorial Day. We usually don't see those numbers until the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So air travel is huge right now, and the system is kind of overwhelmed. And people have been sort of sounding the alarm, saying that, you know, they're sort of cramming 5 pounds into a 10-pound bag, and there needs to be massive overhauls of the air traffic control system nationwide. So it's two prongs of the system. It's the people part of the system, the air traffic controller shortage, and the infrastructure issue, and those things are really coming to a head.
And where do the airlines play into this? I mean, do the airlines need to be donating some money to the FAA to be like, what? Here you go. Here's some money. Fix this.
The airlines are pretty hard on the FAA.
Yeah.
And I've spoken a lot with United Airlines CEO Scott Kirby, who has pounded his fist on the podium essentially for years, saying that we need to better fund the FAA. They need to get more air traffic controllers. And United has a pretty big biased and vested interest in this because Newark is one of their main hubs. Mm-hmm. And so United says when the system is overwhelmed at Newark, when they have fewer controllers at the Newark Approach Control Facility, these controllers that took trauma leave back on April 28th, that leads to United scaling back its flights, purposefully canceling flights so it doesn't overwhelm the system. But other airlines swoop in and essentially take the spots that United has freed up. Mm-hmm. And so that really sort of creates this windfall of problems, and the system is just in the same status as it was before. And so the FAA doing this unprecedented thing is called slot rules. By the FAA doing this, it puts a cap on it. But just to show how contentious this was be a one-day meeting just a couple weeks ago of the FAA and airlines to kind of come to an agreement on this 28 arrivals and departures number. Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be a one-day meeting. It took 3 days. So
to get to that 28 number?
Just to whittle it down there. And so there's a lot of competition, and the airlines are heavily motivated by shareholder value and cramming everybody on every possible seat on every airplane. It wasn't all that long ago that flights were like 80% full most of the time. Now they're full 98-99% of the time. So really, it's just an incredible time for travel.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the FAA and air travel this summer with Pete Muntin, a CNN correspondent, pilot, and flight instructor. Now, we're talking a lot about Newark because Newark hit the news, and I guess, you know, there's just all those jokes that people make about Newark, you know? Yeah. So
a few SNL bits.
Yes, but there's a lot of airports in a lot of major cities all around the country. Are they all having problems like Newark? Do they all need to be under this like lower levels of departures and arrivals?
Even Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said that no airport is really immune to the problems that we're facing Newark. That is something that was really brought on by a special set of circumstances. The FAA moved the facility that was responsible for Newark airspace from Long Island to Philadelphia to try and that was last July, to try and make it so that more controllers would be enticed to work at that facility. It was classified as a hard-to-staff facility by the FAA. And so, no airport is really totally safe from these issues. And the infrastructure problems and the shortage problems are pretty common everywhere. Some facilities are better than others. Some are newer, some are older. Some are really, really aging. And we're talking about facilities that are 50, 60 years old that are literally falling apart or have leaks. Sometimes it's like cobbling together an old house with scotch tape and baling wire. Mm. So the fact that the FAA has this problem. They know they have this problem. And they now have the attention of the Trump administration, which really is keen on fixing this. President Trump is very into airplanes. It's a big status thing for him. Mm-hmm. And he's very into airports. I'm not sure if you remember that his first day of his first administration, he said that LaGuardia is a third world country. That airport has been totally rehabbed. I'm not sure if you've been to LaGuardia lately. It's incredible now. It's very nice. So this is something that the Trump administration really wants to fix. They want to put in what's called a brand new air traffic control system that they say could take 2 to 3 years. It's a pretty aggressive timeline to build 600 new radars, build 6 new air traffic control centers. It's going to be a heavy lift. And the Trump administration has been pretty soft on how much it could cost. We're talking maybe upwards of $30 billion. But Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy has said it's up to Congress to figure out the number.
Hmm. Is this an America-only problem? Are other countries having issues like this?
You know, other countries do things pretty differently. And in Europe, things are air traffic control is funded a lot. It's privatized. Even in Canada, air traffic control is privatized. It's not necessarily run by the government. It is overseen by the government from a regulatory standpoint. But air traffic control is run by a private entity. And that's been something that's been talked about here in the U.S. a few times. In fact, during President Trump's first infrastructure week, that was a pretty central part of the plan. And it went away. We'll see if they bring that up again. Now it's primarily focused on, the administration's primarily focused on revamping the system, revamping the infrastructure. But reporters have asked, will they try privatization again? And it seems that it's not totally out of the question.
Well, I have to think it goes right along with everything DOGE is trying to do, trim down the federal government. If the FAA, if fixing the FAA is going to cost upwards of, what did you say, $30 billion?
Yeah.
You might as well privatize it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. You know, I fly small airplanes for fun. Mm-hmm. And so that is something that would hurt the small airplane world pretty heavily, because those of us who fly for enjoyment would probably be charged a user fee every time we use air traffic control.
Hmm.
So there are some definite flip sides to doing that. And in the U.S., the public sector unions like NATCA, the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, has incredible power. And so far, they have not been very interested in privatizing their jobs. And so we'll see as sort of time goes on. It's hard to sort of take a glance through the looking glass here and figure out exactly what they're going to do. But it does seem like privatization could come up.
What you mentioned, Europe. What about a big powerhouse like China or Japan? How do they handle air traffic issues?
You know, China is an emerging place, and air traffic control is a very, very new thing there. It wasn't that long ago that aviation was really introduced there, and they're a really emerging market for aviation. They're a huge buyer of Boeing airplanes. Remember that Boeing is the biggest exporter here in the U.S. So in Asia, it's pretty different, and a lot of places really follow this privatization model.
Mm. And I also have to think, just as a final question, America has two choices, basically. We have airplanes or cars, because our train system is nothing like Europe. So is that a part of the issue as well, is that there's no competition from a great train system like Europe has?
I was just in Zurich not long ago, and I was on the train there. It's like, you know, being on glass. It makes Acela here in the Northeast look like a 19th century locomotive by comparison. It's kind of a sad state of affairs, the state of transit here in the U.S. And there is not a lot of competition when it comes to traveling relatively short distances that are dominated by the airlines and regional airlines. I mean, the airlines compete with each other a lot, and that sort of keeps the sort of price down and the availability to people pretty high. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it is airplanes or cars. And if you're not in the busy Northeast corridor like I am here in D.C., you don't have much of a choice.
Yep, I'm here in Ohio, and it is definitely
it's definitely tough.
But I want to thank you so much for your time. That we've been talking with Pete Muntean, a CNN correspondent, a pilot, and a flight instructor. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Amy.
And coming up, we're going to talk about travel in and around Columbus. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. A shortage of air traffic controllers and recent accidents in the air are spooking some travelers away from plane travel. Others are spooked away from travel altogether due to anxiety over a possible recession. But that has not stopped the overall summer travel season. Cedar Point is unveiling a new record-breaking coaster, and destinations like Universal's Epic Universe are sure to draw plenty of visitors. AAA projected 45 million Americans plan to travel at least 50 miles or more over Memorial Day weekend. And that's an increase over last year. But will the trend continue? Joining us now is Kara Hitchens, Manager of Public and Government Affairs at AAA. Welcome to the show, Kara.
Good morning, Amy. Thank you.
So what would you say is the main driver for travelers right now? Does it involve money or is it wanting to go to a destination?
I would say actually both. So money, obviously you have to have a budget to be able to travel. And so what we're finding is people still want to travel. They are just being very cost conscious. And they're looking at the economy, they're looking at their budgets, you know, they're taking into consideration all economic factors as to where they're going, how long they're going for the summer holidays.
Now, I mentioned Memorial Day travel estimates by AAA in my introduction. Do you have a way of getting real numbers of travelers or is it always just an estimate?
Well, as we go into the travel season, it's generally just an estimate. Now, for next, we will have real numbers, actual numbers come next year. So as we roll into 4th of July, we will have real numbers for what happened last 4th of July. There'll be a projection based on last year's numbers, based on economic indicators, what will happen for this year, this 4th of July. But it will be based, again, on last year's numbers and a host of other things.
Now, when AAA makes estimates, is Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, are those the big travel times? Or I feel like the whole summer has become travel season now.
It has. Those are the big travel times. But we also talk about particular travel modes. So like earlier this year, they came out with a projection for cruising. And I don't remember what that projection is off the top of my head, but they did provide a projection on how many people will take a cruise this year. So, you know, they kind of do things. We do things a little differently. We look at the holidays, you know, we look at trends and, you know, that type of thing. Yes.
Are you seeing more people traveling by plane or car? You know, we spent earlier in the hour, we were talking about issues with air traffic controllers and airlines. Do you think that that's scaring some people away from air travel?
I would say it is making some people cautious. We have always, though, found that people prefer to drive to their destinations because with driving, you can control your scenario so much more. Obviously, if you're flying, you're going at the airline schedule. If you're driving, you can leave and come when you want. You can make pit stops along the way, and you can do a lot more cost savings when you drive.
Now, both across the country and around Ohio, do you follow some of the trendiest destinations right now? I mean, is everyone going to the same place? Is there something that's really trending?
What we're seeing, kind of the national parks, coastal towns, and mid-sized cities. So like the big cities, I mean, of course, people are still going to go to New York City. That's a big draw. But a lot more people are doing the mid-sized cities like Cincinnati and, you know, Asheville, Santa Fe, those type of places where it's not quite as crowded because, you know, people are still a little concerned about crowds. A lot of folks just don't like crowds. So, you know, those places are making a comeback in travel.
Do you see more people traveling within Ohio, maybe staying within the state, doing day trips or somewhere they can drive to easily?
So what we're seeing is a lot more domestic travel. I will say that. the closer they can stay home and still have a nice experience, we do find that that is happening as well.
I mentioned, Cedar Point has a big new attraction, a very intimidating looking roller coaster. And then there's also Kings Island. Does that bring, do Ohioans mainly go to that, or do you see that it brings a lot of people to Ohio or those destinations?
So I would say anecdotally, you would probably need to talk directly to Kings Island and Cedar Point to find out what their guest lists are. But I would say just knowing historically, it tends to draw a number of people from the region. It's easy to get to those places. They're, fairly convenient and on roadways and highways that people can get to. And kind of at a crossroad, like Cincinnati, can pull from Ohio, obviously Kentucky, Indiana, those places. And same with Cedar Point. You're pulling from Ohio, you're pulling from Michigan. So I would say kind of regional reach for those locations.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the summer travel season with Kara Hitchens, a manager of public and government affairs at AAA. Now, you work for AAA, but you're based in Ohio, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, do you does AAA recommend to people who live in Ohio or outside of Ohio? Do you do any trying to attract people to Ohio, or is that just that's more of the job of the Tourism Bureau?
That's the job of the Tourism Bureau. What AAA's role is to help our members find good deals, help them plan travel, help them with their experiences they travel.
So where are you finding good deals?
There are deals to be found everywhere. You have to be adjust. You have to be flexible with your travel time, flexible with your budget, maybe flexible with how you're eating out. A lot of times, particularly during COVID, we saw a lot of folks would still travel, but maybe they weren't going as far, and maybe they might, book a location, book accommodations that had a kitchen, and maybe they could eat in, a few meals as opposed to going out every single meal. So people are being flexible. There's good deals to be had. There's still even airline deals to be had, even though we are seeing the airline prices are up a bit this year, but there are still good deals to be had.
So when you're looking for a good deal for AAA members, what are you using? Are you going to each airline individually? Are you looking at a particular day of the week? How does one find the good deals?
So our travel advisors have special insight into that. They have a whole board of what they can see that's offered for our members. And so they can help them select, do they want a nonstop flight, or are they okay making a couple of stops, that type of thing. Are they looking to route through a certain location? Some people want to avoid the crowded airports such as Atlanta or Chicago. So maybe they might take a you might go to a smaller airport like Chicago. They might go to Midway as instead of O'Hare, that type of thing. So those things can be savings as well. And our travel advisors have all that good information.
Now, I read that car travel is expected to break records this summer, and you mentioned that a lot more people prefer to drive than fly. Is it because of money, or is it the crowds and the problems at airports?
I would say a little bit of both. Like I said, you can control your travel a bit more with a car. You can decide when you come and go. And right now, travelers are having a great experience because gas prices are down. We haven't seen gas prices down this low in a few years. I don't know exactly how many years, but in a few years. And oddly enough, this is, the height of the travel season, and gas prices are still very good. So that helps with people making that decision to drive or to fly.
And AAA also says that this will be a busy summer travel season, but maybe not as busy as like 2022 was a big year because people were coming out of the pandemic and everyone was anxious to go somewhere. So do you feel like this year is going to be a big year though, not just maybe not 2022 levels?
Yeah, we're still seeing travel numbers up. People are booking all kinds of travel, cruises. Rail travel has become very popular as well. There's destinations out west, heading out west, like, you know, the Rocky Mountaineer, very popular with AAA members. So yeah, we are seeing travel up and a variety of different travel modes being up this year.
I talked with my first guest about how in many parts of America, the only choices are planes or cars. Train travel is not everywhere. Do you see that in areas, I mean, I know you focus on Ohio, but in areas that do have trains, do people tend to like to use them?
I think so. You know, it eases the stress of being in traffic. I know I personally have taken a train to New York City out of Ohio one year, and I personally loved it. I didn't have to worry about the traffic because New York traffic, you know, scared the heck out of me. So it was a wonderful experience for me.
What is AAA doing anything to help people who need a real ID? Have you seen an impact for the need of a real ID impacting air travel?
So we know that the real ID requirement came into effect last month. And in Ohio, AAA does not offer those type of services in our stores. Other states, the AAA offices offer some licensing in their stores, but not here in Ohio. But we do help people with passports. We help them with, you know, passport photos and filling out the form, making sure they have everything they need, but not so much real ID. But it's, you know, we can advise people on the type of documents that you need when you have to go get a real ID.
Are you seeing people worried about being able to travel because they, I don't know, they didn't for the past 20 years they didn't get a real ID?
No, actually, from what I've been told and what I've read, TSA is doing a very good job of helping those folks who didn't get their real ID still be able to travel. Now, there will be a point when that grace period is cut off, but for right now, if you have other documents that you can use, TSA is being very lenient in that area.
Now, I know AAA always comes out with like a list of recommendations for preparing for the summer season, preparing for travel. What do you recommend to people?
So we always tell people if you're going to drive, we certainly recommend you get your car checked out. Nothing worse than being on a vacation and your car breaks down. And it's for safety purposes too. You want to make sure that your vehicle is road ready. We always tell people if you're flying, make sure that you download your airline's app. That way you get notifications of any cancellations or delays. And then, you know, just be prepared for the unexpected, you know, and be flexible. Everyone on the road is trying to get somewhere. So we just want to, you know, give everybody a little grace and hopefully you'll get a little grace back.
Does AAA have a forecast for the rest of summer that you can talk to us about? What's the rest of the year look like, maybe even past summer and into the fall?
So, like I said, we are seeing that travel is up. People are determined to travel. They may, you know, adjust their budget or work within a smaller budget to do travel, but we are seeing that travel is up.
And are you seeing more people being worried about their budgets? Are they, I mean, credit card interest rates are really high. A lot of people like to just put, you know, they don't want to worry about it. They'll worry about it later. They put their travel on a credit card. But interest rates are a factor. Everything's more expensive right now. So, how much do you think that the economy and the projections of possibly a future recession impact travel?
I think it's impacted some. People are being cautious. People are being, you know, leery and kind of watching what's happening. But like I said, they're still traveling. They're still doing it. They're still going out and getting together with family and friends. They are being a little more cautious with their budgets, though.
And is there anything from early travel data for this year that is most surprising to you? Anything that really stuck out?
Well, what we're seeing, one of the trends that we're seeing is a lot more multi-generational travel, families traveling together with, you know, maybe grandma and grandpa and you know, aunts and uncles. Those kind of multi-generational travel plans are happening a lot more this year. Like I said, destinations such as the national parks, because a lot more people are staying domestically for their travel. So, you know, the national parks are very popular.
Does AAA help people with international travel too?
Oh yes. Like I said, we also have passport services where we, you know, for members, we take, you know, we can get their passport pictures together and help them complete, applications and that type of thing. So yes. And we also have the international driving permit that you can that people can secure at AAA offices. So yes, international travel is still happening. We're still able to help. We just don't see that as much as we are seeing right now domestic travel.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We've been talking with Kara Hitchens, Manager of Public and Government Affairs at AAA. Thanks for your time, Kara.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to talk about some national travel trends for the summer travel season. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And just like anything, traveling has its own trends. From where people are going, how they are getting there, and what they're doing once they get there, travel is changing. And with big shakeups from companies like Southwest, now charging for bags and assigning seats, to the need for a real ID, air travel is not always smooth sailing. Not to mention issues with airports, shortages of air traffic controllers, and concerns over safety. Will more people decide to drive this summer rather than fly? Joining us now is Hannah Sampson, a staff writer for the Washington Post, reporting on travel and tourism. Welcome to the show, Hannah.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So is 2025 shaping up to be a different travel year than years past?
You know, I actually think it's shaping up to be, with a few wrinkles accepted, pretty standard for what we've seen the last couple of years. We had, you know, obviously in 2020, we had this huge dip in travel, and then it was just go, go, go in the couple of years after that in big rebounds. Mm-hmm. But then we've just kind of had stable busyness. And I would think that's what we would expect this year, with a question about how the economy and economic uncertainty is affecting the timing of when people travel and when they make their travel decisions.
Yeah, you mentioned a few wrinkles. So is the economy one of those wrinkles?
Yeah, I would say, you know, people are waiting to see how things like tariffs shake out in their day-to-day lives and whether, you know, they still have a job or a job that pays as well in another month or so. So maybe people, I just actually read a story today that said, travel companies are reporting that people are holding off on making big vacation plans for the summer until closer to the date. So maybe people are not making the big plans for like late July or August yet, but they're going to see how June goes. And then maybe in mid-July, they'll say, okay, August, well, right before school goes back, we'll do this plan. Mm-hmm. But I think people are maybe kind of taking it a little slow and seeing how their pocketbooks feel as the summer progresses.
Well, speaking as a planner, I wouldn't be able to plan last minute travel. That would drive me crazy. But I can see how if you are worried about money and you want to just, you know, I mean, it seems to be like touch and go every month of whether we're talking about the word recession or not. So is it people who worry more about month to month expenses that are deciding on travel at the last minute?
Yeah, I mean, it's likely not going to be somebody who's going to do, a massive trip to Tokyo or something, which is actually a destination that we're seeing trend this summer. I think people who are making the big trips know they have to lock that in ahead of time. But it's like folks who are maybe going to drive to a lake house a couple states away or, you know, take a trip to a resort with the family that you can kind of plan on the fly. Yeah, I probably it's more price sensitive people who are making those last minute decisions, and the folks who've been saving or the folks who aren't as tied to kind of the whims of the economy, they have a luxury of a luxury trip, basically.
Yeah. Now, You mentioned there's a few wrinkles to travel, so we talked about money being one of them. But another wrinkle is worry about air travel. Do you think people on a daily basis are concerned when they hear about problems at Newark Airport and they hear about the shortage of air traffic controllers? Here and there we hear about, you know, a devastating plane crash. So is that impacting people's decision to travel by air?
You know, we're still seeing a ton of people traveling by air. And I just saw that Memorial Day numbers were higher than last year's numbers, at least from a TSA perspective, and at least like on the busiest Memorial Day travel day. So I wouldn't say we're seeing like air travel take a huge hit, but I do, just based on conversations that I have and conversations I know other people are having, there is a greater element of concern, I think, this year because the worst unthinkable thing happened, which was a fatal plane crash in the US when we just thought that shouldn't happen anymore. So people are paying a lot of attention to the things you mentioned, airport safety and air traffic control shortages. I know Newark has been in the news a lot, and it's been very bad for people who've been traveling in and out because of delays. One of the issues there is that a runway was closed for construction, and that is going to be over pretty soon, possibly even sooner than expected. So hopefully we'll see Newark kind of ease a little bit, and hopefully the really startling news out of there about air traffic controllers having like complete communications blackouts for brief periods of time is enough to kind of wake everybody up who needs to be woken up to the fact that there's infrastructure that needs to be updated and just actual physical systems that need to be looked at urgently. So, you know, we can only believe that the people who need to take these things seriously are, and that in the case of like DC, where I fly out of all the time, the lapses that allowed that plane crash to happen earlier this year are being prevented like in multiple layers of care and safety. And like, that's what I have to tell myself and believe every time I book a flight out of DCA, because, you know, if people don't have confidence in the air traffic system, it all collapses. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I think what we're seeing is that people still have confidence enough to fly. Mm-hmm.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about travel trends with Hannah Sampson, a staff writer for The Washington Post, who reports on travel and tourism. Now, you mentioned a couple minutes ago that Tokyo is an international destination that you're seeing on the rise. Are people traveling outside of the U.S. as much as they have in past years?
We're seeing, I don't know if the number is going to shape up to be as busy, but I have a feeling they will, because we're actually seeing some international airfare kind of averaging lower than in recent years. And, you know, a deal might get you to go to Europe when you wouldn't have gone in the last couple of years. So the sense is people are still going to want to go to the iconic places like Paris and Barcelona and London, and also travel within the US. But if you haven't gone to Europe for the last couple of years and you see those flights are a little bit cheaper now, maybe it is the time to go. And I think we're seeing that continued interest. And one place where I'm going this summer and where people can definitely get a deal is Canada, where flights are definitely averaging much lower than recent years. It's worth a thought if folks are looking for kind of a last minute international plan.
Yeah, and depending on where you are, some places you can drive to Canada. You don't even have to fly. So
that is actually what I'm doing. But if I didn't have to bring a couple of dogs with me, I probably would look at flying again.
Right. Now, what about people from other countries visiting America? Do we know any statistics or anecdotes on that? Are people still coming to America as the same as in past years?
So what we've seen so far this year is a little bit affected by it's weird, but the timing of Easter. Easter was, I believe it's earlier last year and later this year, or the opposite, but it makes it kind of hard to compare month to month because of fluctuations based on that. The definite thing that we're seeing is can travel by Canadians to the US is down, like, precipitously might be too strong a word, but significantly. Canada is a huge market for the US. Like Canadian visitors are the biggest source of international visitors.
And but Canada's mad at us because President Trump wants to make them the 51st state, so they don't want to come here. Is that basically?
Right.
Yeah.
Tariffs, 51st state. And stories that maybe aren't getting as much attention here, but are getting a ton of attention in Canada about international travelers being like held by ICE or subjected to significant questioning or uncomfortable searches at the border. Like those things, even if they're not happening to the majority of Canadians, when they happen to even a small percent of travelers, that's kind of resounding in a really big way there. So I've talked to Canadians, I've talked to travel companies who just say Canada travel to the US is down. How like European travel to the US and other countries is going to shake out, I think, is a question mark. But overall, it's like maybe slightly lower, but from Canada, definitely the biggest hit.
Let's talk about travel within America for a few minutes. A lot of people are going to be traveling to Florida for the new Universal Epic Universe Park. Your story you wrote in the Washington Post about it, you called it Mario meets Harry Potter. So you got to test run the park. What's it like?
Oh, man, it was so fun. I'm a theme park person. I'm from Florida. So we were able to like get a hotel room and get it at sneak peek, just like anybody else who got a hotel room back in April when I was in Florida anyway for spring break. And we just kind of ran around with our kids and gaped at everything. There's a Harry Potter world that's kind of like a French take, which is beautiful and really cool. And they have butterbeer crepes that are incredibly sweet. There's this super overstimulating, loud and kind of fantastical Super Mario world land that has rides and just like all the bleeps and bloops and little things you can punch and Donkey Kong, like very fun. Also, like I said, very loud, and a totally charming How to Train Your Dragon based land that I did not anticipate loving, but it was so cute and fun. I think they really hit it out of the park with that. And just some really good roller coasters, if you like roller coasters.
Yeah,
so I think Orlando is going to be busy on account of that.
That's what I was going to say. So Universal did a good job. Mm-hmm. So it's worth the money because Universal is arguably expensive.
Oh, yeah. No question, it's expensive. And if you're going to Universal for this new park, you're probably going to want to go to the other two parks that are already there. Mm-hmm. It's not a cheap proposition for sure.
And I don't know if you follow Ohio things very much, but Cedar Point opened a brand new roller coaster that is arguably looks intimidating and scary to me, but fun for many, fun for all. Do you find that smaller theme parks are a destination for people who maybe don't? Because going all the way to Florida, there's a flight involved, especially here from Ohio. It's hard to drive to Orlando. Mm-hmm. So maybe Cedar Point is a destination for people closer driving wise.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't know that if somebody has to fly somewhere already, they'll probably fly to Orlando and not Ohio for the roller coaster fix, but driving distance. If people can make it a shorter driving trip, local or regional amusement parks and theme parks are like huge hits, I think, for sure. And a new roller coaster is a surefire way to draw people in, ride the new coaster, do everything, all your favorites again, eat a bunch. It's the best thing about summer.
What are you seeing about people flying and the need for real ID? For the most part, do you think people are getting on board and finally getting this real ID after 20 years of delaying it?
You know, I think I'm trying to remember what the stat was. It was something like 80% of people who were flying had some kind of compliant ID, whether it was a real ID approved form that was issued by a state or some kind of passport or other federal kind of ID that works. So, you know, that's a decent number, but it's still 20% of people who don't. So what it seems like is there are a lot of people, yes, who are kind of rushing to make that deadline. A lot of people who are saying, like, when I have to renew my ID, I'll get the real ID, but I'm not going to go crazy doing it before that. especially when they weren't sure if the deadline was going to be pushed again, because it's been pushed and pushed and pushed. But also what we're seeing is that TSA so far, as far as I know, has not been denying folks the ability to fly. They've been warning that if you don't have a real ID, you'll be notified that you should, and then you could be subjected to additional levels of screening before they'll let you on a plane. So at some point, will they change this and say, okay, now we're really cracking down and it's only real ID or a passport? You know, probably maybe at some point. But so far, we're not even really seeing airport chaos. Like, we went and looked for it and we weren't seeing it.
Another thing related to airlines that lots of people have been following is everything that Southwest used to say set it apart is now gone. So Southwest is adding fees to its bags. They're assigning seats. What does this do to the airline industry whenever someone like a Southwest gives up on all of the stuff that they would like said, this is our company model?
Yeah. And it's the date for booking a Southwest flight when you could still get free bags just passed about a week ago. And you better believe I was online looking for my flights for the rest of the year just so I could get the free bag perk still fit in there. And I did get one flight in. But I mean, I've talked to people who are bereft, maybe is too strong a word, but who are not pleased about this. And they've just said, like, you know, now it's just the race to the bottom. Like, everybody is going to hit us with the same bummer charges. And, what are they going to compete on? Like, the routes that they have, I don't know, occasionally there will be good prices. It really, like, Southwest was really this kind of standalone outlier, quirky airline where you knew there were going to be a slightly different experience. And if you liked that, then that was really your go-to. Now you just have to shop around and like do some real apples to apples comparisons where, you know, all you're going to be getting is a seat and you're going to have to pay for your bags and everything else. It's, you know, it makes it more boring. I'm sure the other airlines, like, I don't actually know how they feel, but, you know, it was like, okay, one more competitor who's doing exactly the same as us, like, hooray. But for travelers, it really does kind of take this one little spark of a special airline out of the mix and forces us to confront these fees that we didn't have to pay before.
One of the bummers that got me last year was we were checking two bags and one was overweight and one was underweight. And they were going to charge me for the overweight bag. And I was like, but the other one's underweight. Can't we just? And so I had to sit there in the airport and get out of line and switch things from one suitcase to another. And I was
the
just
repacking,
like,
yeah.
I was like, this is such a bummer. I'm in the middle of the airport in the hallway.
But that's exactly what I would have said to do. It's just like reorganize that weight.
Yes. I learned a valuable lesson.
Right. Have a scale at home. Like,
exactly.
I don't know.
Yes, exactly. Well, just one final question. Do you feel like Memorial Day shaped up to be as big of a travel weekend across the country as it sometimes is? I mean, I can tell you here in Central Ohio, our Memorial Day was cold and rainy. So cold, in fact, that the pools that were supposed to open did not open. What did you see for Memorial Day around the country?
Yeah, I mean, I know that the air travel numbers were still pretty strong. So I guess the folks who would have had plans to fly were still flying. You know, how many people canceled their road trips last minute? Hard to say at this point. Probably we'll have a better sense of that in the next couple of months. It was cold here, pretty cool here in DC too. So I'm sure that there were like fewer barbecues and pool days than you might see on your average Memorial Day weekend. But people who are taking advantage of like a long weekend to go see friends or loved ones or sites or something, it seems like they still did that.
And just as a final question, we have less than a minute, but what are you looking for the rest of this summer? What will you, as a travel and tourism writer, what's on your radar?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're looking to see if some of the trends that we saw out of Europe last summer around over tourism and local communities being really fed up with the impacts of tourism are continuing. I think we'll look for, you know, delays and air travel safety here in the U.S. And we're going to kind of look to see how the economic impact on travel shakes out. Are people still getting out there and traveling? And are they traveling differently this year because they're worried about how much it's going to cost them?
Thank you so much for your time. We've been talking with Hannah Sampson, staff writer for The Washington Post, who reports on travel and tourism. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. Thank you so much to our staff, senior producer Marcus Charleston, producer Aaron Esmont Rabinowitz, our student producers Chris Corcoran, David Stein, Iza Huck, and Colin Simpson. Thanks to Colin Simpson, who produced this show today. And also video production by The Ohio Channel, board operation by Chris Johnston and Cameron Howard. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.